Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on tithing versus income tax right after this. You know, with an income of $50,000, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes. That's if you're self-employed and you're paying that advertised 15.3% rate. Well then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from the $50,000, that's your income, and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of that $50,000 twice? Now, the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of $50,000 in Social Security tax. Remember that $7,650. Then they make you pay 17% of $50,000 in income tax. Well, that means that you paid 17% of that $7,650 twice. Now, that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from you and from everyone else that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears or Penny's or your credit card company charged you twice, like Social Security and the IRS does? No, isn't that just real special? For more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, Tax and Status, our school, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Remember, georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of the income tax, tithing, first tithe, second tithe, and third tithe, holy day offerings. And then I said, we got these mysterious people called Levites, so we haven't figured out who to send this money to yet. Now, you won't have too much problem finding some poor people in your neighborhood. I mean, you know, sometimes somebody's house burns down. You could give the money if you wanted to the Salvation Army or the Red Cross or some other charity who, in turn, will give the money out to somebody that's in need. I mean, you could do it that way if you think about it. Now, the second tithe, you shouldn't have any problems with second tithe, and that's your vacation pay. Well, you know, if you aren't saving your vacation pay, then when it comes time to go to the Feast of Tabernacles, you might not have it. And by law, you're required to keep it. So here's God comes along and says, you've got 19 paid holidays per year. Sucker, pay attention. 19 paid holidays. Don't you need some money so that when these holidays come up, you'll have some money with which to attend these holidays? Don't you need money for bus fare? Don't you need money for motel or hotel and for room and board while you're there? And then when you're there, don't you want to buy a little something special, you know, like maybe some trinkets and baubles and bangles and beads? God, I had one guy come in here one time. He's a pretty wealthy guy. He said, what do I do with all this extra second tithe that I've got? And I said, you got extra second tithe? What do you mean by that, Dennis? And he said, well, you know, I work and I take my first tithe and I And I set that aside in first tithe can, and I got second tithe in my second tithe can, and I got third tithe, you know, twice every 7 years in my third tithe can. I don't have any problem with the first and third tithe. I'm having a problem with the second tithe. I can't spend it all. I said, you can't spend it all. You can't spend your vacation money. You got too much. He said, yeah, that's it. He said, I've got too much vacation money. I can't spend it all. I said, oh my God, I've never heard of a problem like that before. I have never heard of anybody that had so much vacation money that they couldn't spend it all. I said, what seems to be the problem? He says, well, I make about $1 million a year. I said, oh my God. And he said, I have about $100,000 in Federal Reserve notes, of course, in second tithe. And you know, try as I might, you know, you can only eat so many steaks, and you can only stay in so many 5-star hotels, 19 days a year, and to spend that money. And he said, I can only spend about 25 or 30,000 of it, and I've been trying real hard. God, I wish I had a problem like that. I said, well, now, did you read that section over here in Deuteronomy 14? And I flipped over here to him. I'll do it for you in case you have this problem. It comes up. I've only had it one time. It may come up and you may have this problem. It says here, you shall eat. This is Deuteronomy 14, verse 23. It says, you shall eat before the Eternal your God in the place which he shall choose to place his name there, the tithes of your corn, of your wine, and of your oil, and firstlings of your herds, and of your flocks, and that you may learn to fear the Eternal your God always. So you have to spend this during this period of time, this 8-day period in the fall or this 8-day period in the spring. It says so right there. You got this extra $50,000. You can't spend that $50,000, Dennis, anyplace else at any other time of the year, just during these holy days. Now, if the way be too long for you and you've got too much of this tithe money, you can bind it up into money. All right, you got this money now. And then in verse 25, he says, I want you to turn it into money, bind up the money in your hand, and you shall go to the place which Eternal your God shall choose. All right, now you're there? Are you there? You're in Kauai, or you're in Tahiti, or wherever it is. All right, now, here's what you do with it. You bestow that money for whatsoever your soul lusts after. Got that? Underline that. Whatsoever. I don't know what whatsoever is, but there's no limitation on it. I don't know what it is, but I do know there's no limitation. So I said, well, have you thought about buying your wife a new Mercedes? Have you thought about buying your wife a new house? Have you thought about remodeling your wife's kitchen? Have you, you know, just start thinking. And he said, my God, you mean I could spend it on my remodeling of my house, or I could buy a new car or a new pickup or a new tractor? Yeah, whatever your soul lusts after, Dennis. All right, so Phil, if you've got that problem and you get too much money and you don't know what to do, you send it to me and I'll take care of it. I know what to do with it. And now you do too, so now you're as smart as I am. Now, Proverbs 3, verses 9 and 10. Here's where we get to this increase down here. Remember your third question, Phil, was if I exchange my labor for wood, isn't that a property exchange, and how did I increase from that? All right, now listen to this. Proverbs 3, verses 9 and 10. Here's where this increase word comes in. Remember, only one time is the word increase mentioned here in this tithing scenario. It's in the book of Proverbs. And in case you're wondering about this, remember that Jesus said in Matthew 4:4, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word. Got that? Every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Okay, here's one of them. It's called increase. He said, Phil, honor the Eternal with your substance and with the first fruits of all of your increase. Got that? First fruits, underline that, underline the word all of your increase. All right, now, is cutting wood an increase? You know, you've expended your labor. Let's picture this. I have to do this every year. I expend my labor. I gas up my chainsaw and I sharpen the chain and I and I get my oil and I get my pickup, and I go down the ridge over here and I find some trees and I cut them down. And then I cut them up and then I load them into my pickup and I haul them up and I stack it in my wood pile. And then I take that wood out of there and I burn it in my stove. Every time I make one of these programs, I get up and when I'm doing the finalization of the disc, and I run outside and I put some more wood in my furnace. And it makes life very comfortable for me. I am increased by the heat and the warmth that I enjoy here in my studio from that wood that I'm burning in my big wood furnace. Well, I didn't have to expend my labor. And I could have sat there and twiddled my thumbs and made no wood, and I could be sitting here shivering and freezing in my office making this same program. And I decided that my standard of living includes heat. I've got a switch on my wall, and it includes light. And I got a bathroom in here, and it's inside my house. I have indoor plumbing. Modern indoor plumbing. Thought I'd share that with you. Now, the argument that tax protesters have used is that my labor isn't taxable. Well, I already told you that the word all appears in these tithing statutes very, very frequently. And then here's God comes along and he says, I own you, sucker. I got a little deal like that. See, I've got some cows here, and I own those cows. I have the power of life and death over those cows. They live or die at my word. You ever think about that? Yes, sir. They don't live or die at your word. And if one of them died at your word, we call that cattle rustling out here. And we have a very dim view of cattle rustlers. I can kill my cows. You can't. You can kill your cows. I can't. God comes along and says, hey, I own you. Let me explain that to you. I had a bicycle one time when I was a kid. It was a Ward's Riverside. It was $85 in 1950. $85! Do you know how much money that is? Just multiply that times 10. That's $850. $850. It had bells and whistles on it. Well, anyway, I was given that bike for Christmas. Just to let you know that I used to be normal. Practice Christmas, Easter, New Year's, birthdays. So, I'd park that bike up on my porch, and if you came by and you said, well, whose bike is that? I'd say proudly, that's my bike. Mine. I'm 11 years old. Mine. Now, one day, I did something. I don't remember what it was, but I remember I did something. I had a paper route, too. This is what really, really, really bugged me. I had a paper. I needed that bicycle to deliver my papers. And I did something. I don't know what it was. And ticked the old man off, and the old man said, you're grounded. Grounded. And that was fortunate for me, because ordinarily, he just grabbed me, bounced me off the wall, beat the living hell out of me. But this time he didn't do any of that. He grounded me. I never heard that word grounded before. Sounded like an Air Force term, you know. Pilots get grounded. Well, I'd been grounded, and he took my bicycle away from me for a week. Little lesson here on property rights, Phil. Took my bicycle. You wonder whose bicycle that was? I called it mine. But my daddy came in and took it away from me, took my property, grounded me, and made me walk my paper route for a week. Can you believe that? Now you can see why I wanted to escape that tyranny, that tin horn dictator. Well, that gives you a little understanding of how this property thing works. You see, at age 11, my daddy owned me. Well, truth of the matter was, it was the state of California that owned me, but he was the guardian-in-chief, the guardian ad litem of the state. He was the guardian in place of the real guardian. There was a real guardian, but it was an ad litem guardian. That was my daddy. And that bicycle over there didn't belong to me. I had an equitable interest in my dad's bike. Yeah. And that's kind of where you're at, Phil. You see, you live here on God's planet Earth, and you owe some rent. And the rent's 10%. 10% of everything that you make. It's an old adage that says the world owes you a living, but you got to work like hell to collect your receivables. And that's about the way that game is played. He owns all the gold and the silver and the brass and the iron and everything that's in the earth. He owns you, just like I own my cows. And my daddy owned my bike by way of owning me. And while I had a claim on my bike, I still had to make the bed, take out the garbage, and do certain fundamentals. Now, you have the same problem here dealing with this God of Abraham. See, he's got certain fundamentals. And here in America, we have not been paying attention to these fundamentals. Well, not for the last 100 years or so. And so he gave us a little warning here, and I think it's about Deuteronomy 7 or Deuteronomy 9 along in there. He said, "You will not prolong your days upon the land." He said, "You know, you guys give me the finger. There's going to come a point in time when I'm going to come unhinged." Let's see if I can find that over here. So here in chapter 9. Yeah, I think it is right there. Yeah, let me read this to you. It says in chapter 9, this is Deuteronomy chapter 9, verse 5, it says, "Not for your righteousness, nor for the uprightness of your heart do you go in to possess their land, but for the wickedness of these nations." It's the wickedness of the Navajo, the Arapaho, and the Apaches, and the Hoopa Indians. It's for their wickedness that I'm going to dispossess them and give you their good land. That the Lord your God does drive them out from before you, and that he may perform the word which he swore unto your fathers Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. See, it wasn't anything that you did, Phil. It was Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaddies, you know, about 85 generations back. God made a deal with those three guys. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He made a deal. Contract. It's called the Abrahamic Covenant. And then Jacob made a second covenant. And he said, I'm going to give you and your posterity all this ground. You're one of their posterity. In verse 6, he said, "Understand, therefore." Got this? Get it through your head, therefore. "That the Eternal your God giveth thee not this good land to possess it for your righteousness, because you're a stiff-necked people." He drove these people out and gave us this land, not because we're good guys, but because they were bad guys. Maybe it's in verse 7 over here where he said he's going to deal with his enemies face to face. In chapter 7, verse 9, he says, "Know therefore that the Eternal, your God, he is God, the faithful God, which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations, and repays them that hate him to their face to destroy them. And he will not be slack to him that hates him. He will repay him to his face. You shall therefore keep the commandments and the statutes and the judgments which I command you this day to do them." Do you hear that? This guy says, "You give me the finger, I'm going to pay you eyeball to eyeball. And I won't be slack when payday comes." Now that's one more reason why I tithe. My old daddy taught me that there's a lot of pain, suffering, and anguish that comes from disobedience. All right, now I told you about Malachi, remember? Malachi 3, 7 through 12. We started this discussion off with the benefits that you get. Just a little reminder, he said, "You're cursed with a curse because you've robbed me, even this whole nation. Now you bring me all the tithes into my storehouse that there may be meat in my house. You feed my Levites like I told you. And now prove me. Test me. Let me show you. says the Eternal of Hosts. If I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. There should be so much coming your way that you do not have a place to put it all. And if you've got room for all that you have, you are not being blessed to the standards that God told you He would bless you. One more little thing I'm going to pass on to you here. There's another thing beside tithing that's very important. It's called Sabbath keeping. In Isaiah chapter 58, I've got to share this one with you because we had a patriarch by the name of Jacob. He was filthy rich. I mean, this guy's got money coming out of his earbuds. And in verse 13, Isaiah 58, verse 13, you need to tuck this one away in your heart. He says, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and if you call the Sabbath a delight, if you call the Holy One honorable, and if you honor the Holy One, or you honor Him, that's God, not doing your own ways, not finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then shall you delight yourself in the Eternal, and I will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth, and I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, because the mouth of the Eternal has spoken it. Now, if you'd like to be fed with the heritage of Jacob, I mean, this guy's filthy rich. I like that. I like to have plenty. I don't like shortages, and I don't like God's poor. I'm just like that. If you want to be one of God's poor, you just get right after it. Just leave me behind. Go do your thing. Or as they say down here in the South, you're thying. Now here in Matthew 23:23, the Messiah had something to say about tithing. He said, woe unto you scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites. Because, he says, because you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and you have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith, these ought you to have done, and not to have left the other undone. How about mercy? You ever wonder what mercy is, and faith, and judgment? Well, judgment, it's the law of God. Mercy. You know, if you paid your third tithe, you'd be showing mercy to those poor people around you. You know, the widows, the orphans, and the fatherless and the strangers. And this word faith over here, you got to look up this word faith. The Apostle James said, you show me your faith, and I'll show you my faith by my works. Faith is synonymous with works. And if you were doing your works, then you would be collecting, saving, and paying out your third tithe. You'd be collecting, saving, and paying out your second tithe. And you'd be collecting, saving, and paying out your first tithe. Luke 11:42, he says the same thing. And then in Hebrews 7, verses 1 through 12, he says, for this Melchizedek, the king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, who met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, being first, by interpretation, king of righteousness, and after that, king of Salem, which is king of peace. Without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life. You're talking about God there. This Melchizedek was the guy that we call Jesus, mentioned in John 1:1. The beginning, you know, they call that guy. Look that up in John 1:1. Kind of forget now exactly how that's worded. This guy Jesus, he was around quite a bit, and he was around for a long time. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word, or Logos, was with God, and the Word was God. And that's who this guy Melchizedek was. Abraham was paying his tithe directly to God Himself. Without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God, abideth a priest continually, Now consider how great this man was, unto whom even the patriarch Abraham gave the tenth of the spoils. Underline that word spoils, Phil. Then look it up in the dictionary. The spoils can include anything, everything. It's property. It's something that you have taken or possess. We look at spoils and we say, well, that pirate spoiled the ship. He stole all this. Spoils can come to you in a number of different ways. It doesn't have to be stolen. And Abraham, who had a lot of spoil, had a lot of wealth, gave the tenth of all of the spoils, not just cows, not just corn, a tenth of the spoils. Let me pause right there, and let me cover this last item over here on this wood. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, that instead of going down and cutting wood, let's suppose you took a bushel of corn out and you seeded it. And you seeded the corn, and at the end of the year, you reaped 100-fold. You got 100 bushels back. How much is your tithe? Well, if from your observation that the only tithe that you pay would be the tithe on corn or seed or herds or flocks, well, then you'd pay 10 bushels, wouldn't you? Okay. Well, let's suppose that instead of corn, let's suppose that you went out and you seeded wheat, got 100 bushels back. Well, then you'd tithe 10 bushels of wheat, wouldn't you? Yeah. Or if your cows delivered you 100 calves, you'd tithe 10 calves. Or 100 sheep, you'd tithe 10 sheep. But you ask the question, well then, if I go down and I cut wood, which you neither seeded, nor watered, nor tendered, how was I enriched, or how was I increased? Well, let me ask you this. How were you increased when you grew that corn? Well, I can eat the corn. Then you can't be heated by the wood. Well, I sold the wood. You weren't increased by the money that you received for the wood, but I didn't sell it for money. I traded it for wheat, and you weren't nourished by the wheat that you traded it for. Abraham paid the tenth of all of the spoils, whether it was gold or silver or wheat or corn or beans or honey or whatever the hell it was. He paid the tenth of the spoil, all of it, property. All right, and he paid it to who? He paid it to God himself. Live and direct, eyeball to eyeball. Now he said in verse 5, truly they that are the sons of Levi, who receive the office of the priesthood, have a commandment to take tithes of the people according to the law, that is, of their brethren, though they come out of the loins of Abraham, but he whose descent is not counted from them received tithes of Abraham, and blessed him that had the promises. And without all contradiction, the less is blessed of the better. And here men that die receive tithes. But there he receiveth them of whom it is witnessed that he liveth. These Levites who collect the tithe and live on it. These Levites, you know, the people that work in the civil service. This is the IRS guy that's out collecting the civil law tithe for bail. The judge. The President of the United States. See, all these people sit in the office or in the seat of Moses and the Levitical priesthood, or of Aaron and the Levitical priesthood. Think about it. The Chief Justice, John Roberts, is in reality sitting in the seat of Moses. He sits in the seat of Aaron, the high priest. President Bush sits in the seat of Moses. He sits in the seat of executive authority or power. The judges in the federal system sit in the seat of Aaron, the high priest, the Aaronic priests. The judges who sit in the seats of your courthouses around the country sit in the seat of the Levites. And they are supported by your income tax. This is not a system set up by God. This is a counterfeit system that is set up by you and I. We said we are not going to practice this damn tithing, and we are not going to practice the laws of God. We're going to practice the laws that are given to us by Ted Kennedy and Hillary Clinton. Oh, and Dianne Feinstein. Well, okay. It's a choice that we had to make, and we made it. And you got to live with it. But I'm not so sure that the results that we're getting are anywhere near as profitable or anywhere near as good for us as this tithing system was set up. I think that people would live better on third tithe than they do on welfare and food stamps. I think that our government would cost a lot less and our education would be a lot better if we followed the education laws and educated our children at home and homeschool rather than spending $7,000 a kid and educating them in public school. But then, hey kids, you made your choice. Now if at some point in time you wake up and you say, God, maybe the choice I made wasn't as good as I thought it was, why don't you change? You know, did you ever buy a car and the damn thing was a lemon? Did you ever think about getting rid of it and buying another one? You know, if you make a mistake in life, did you ever stop and think about, well, gee, maybe I ought to change my lifestyle. Maybe I ought to stop and think about this for a while and stop doing that. I used to tithe to a church. I didn't have any qualms about it. I knew I owed the tithe. So I paid it to these religious guys. They said that I owed it to them. And then when the guy said that he wanted me to tithe on the gross, and I looked at the physical impossibility of tithing on the gross, I said, wait a minute. I'm not sure that this guy has looked up this tithing story and has all the facts and figures. Now, I've taken the time here, Phil, to give you all the facts and figures and all the story here. Now, we haven't covered quite all the story. We've only got a little bit more to go, but I've researched it out, and I'm coming to some conclusions, and I came to a couple of conclusions. We still haven't figured out who these Levites are, and we still haven't figured out who to pay the tithe to. Now, we can figure out second and third tithes. I don't think that's too big of a problem. You probably never heard of second and third tithe. That's probably a revelation. That's probably not too difficult. You're going to do that yourself. But these Levites and the temple was destroyed. Hey, man, our Levitical priesthood was destroyed with Titus in 70 A.D. We don't know where those Levites are, do we? Because if you do, you know something more than I do, because I haven't been able to identify them. We got a law that requires that we pay this tithe, and we've got a law that requires that we pay it to the Levites. And we don't know where the Levites are, do we? Hang on. Let me give you your mid-course reminder so you can go potty, light up a cigarette, and go get another beer. You're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. And for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. We're in Hebrews chapter 7, verses 1 through 12. Now, many of these religious guys come along, you know, and they need some scriptural authority for getting you to pay your tithe to these religious guys, you know, the church lady or churchman. So they go to Hebrews chapter 7, and they call this the tithing chapter. And it's true, the Apostle Paul is writing this letter to the Hebrews, and he's giving them some information concerning tithing. But this chapter doesn't tell you to send your tithe money to some religious guy. It's giving you the history here, and it says Abraham paid tithe to Melchizedek, paid tithe to God, that this is God's tithe, this is God's taxing system, and he requires it. And he says, you guys haven't been doing this. And he identified Melchizedek as being Jesus Christ himself, God. He goes on to say in verse 9, and as I may, so say Levi also, who received tithes, paid tithes in Abraham. And by allegory, he's saying this guy Levi was paying this tithe before he was born. He was in the loins of Abraham. For he was yet in the loins of his father when Melchizedek met him. If therefore perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law, what further need was there that another priest should arise after the order of Melchizedek and not be called after the order of Aaron? For the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of the law. And it's this verse 12 that they seize on and they say, see, the law has changed, and we don't pay our tithe to the Levites anymore. Now you pay it to Oral Roberts. What a crock of BS. Take a look here at the antecedents, and let's take a look at what's being said here. He said, if therefore, in verse 11, perfection were by the Levitical priesthood, well then, obviously, perfection was not achieved under the Levitical priesthood. Well, what was the Levitical priesthood for? How did it work? Why did it work that way? How did these judges... How did this priesthood work when we paid our tithe to these priests? What were the services that we received from them? If it wasn't perfection, for under it the people received the law, what law are we talking about? Is it the Ten Commandments, or was it the law of tithing, or was it the law of sacrifice? It's the law of sacrifice that he's talking about, which is the job of the Levitical priests. Their job was to take your sin offering and to offer it for you. Just like the job of a judge today is to marry you. There's some religious work, but basically the guy is not marrying people every day. Basically the guy is a judge. Now, religious people are not judges. In fact, if you've got a controversy in your church and you take it to your local preacher, he's liable to shift that off to the board of directors or the board of deacons or tell you anything. He will do anything in his power to avoid making a judgment, which if he was a Levite would be his job, to decide the controversy and to decide the controversy according to the law. Now, the priesthood was changed from Melchizedek to the Levitical priesthood. And when the Messiah returns, the priesthood is going to be turned back over to Melchizedek, Jesus, when he returns. But that ain't happened yet. And to cite verse 12 as being the verse that says, well, see, there's a change in the law, therefore we're going to have to pay this to Oral Roberts. Peter made an observation concerning that. Let me flip over here and I'll cite you the scripture. Many people cite the Apostle Paul off point and out of context. You know that? And Peter made that observation here. flip back here to 2 Peter 3, verse 16. 2 Peter 3, 16. He said, as also in all of his epistles, speaking in them of these things, in which some things are hard to be understood, which they that are unlearned and unstable rest, as they do also the other scriptures unto their own destruction. Now, you preachers out there that are collecting tithes of people, you ought to pay attention to that. If you take a look at the tithing statute, tithes belong to the Levites and only the Levites, and anybody that comes in there and takes that tithe has to be a Levite. Or there's one other solution to this problem. If the Levite received the money, what would he do with it? What would that Levite do with the money? Now, I've had people say to me, well, Mr. Gordon, I really like your radio program, and I really like your work, and I really like your school, and I'm going to send my tithe to you. I tell them, don't you send your tithe to me, Sonny, because I'm not a Levite. The laborer is worthy of his hire. You hire me. You don't send me tithes. I'm not part of that inheritance. I've got my inheritance. I'm on the land. I've got my inheritance. I've got cattle, land, sheep, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil. I've got the birthright. You don't need to send me any charity. The guy you need to send the charity to is the Levite. You were told not to forsake the Levite, or the stranger, or the fatherless, or the widow. Those that are in need. Some guy's house burns down, he loses everything. Some guy got killed in the trade towers up there, and so Congress came in and said, well, what we need to do is spend $1 billion or $2 billion on those people and take care of them. Well, okay. Congress takes care of their own. God takes care of his, and he gave us a system by which we're to do that. Now, the religious guys came in here, and they have identity theft on their records. They are claiming that they are Levites. Levites, boys and girls, aren't developed out of a civil service test. A Levite is born, just like a king, a prince, a princess. You are born to that. And you're either a Levite or you're not a Levite. And boys and girls, I'm not one of them. Do not send your tithe here. And if you do and you label it, I'll send it back. No, don't get me in on that. And preachers over here, unless you're actually descended from the Levites, you ought to be damn careful about taking tithes. The church in the New Testament was supported by the people who were out doing the work. Paul was a tent maker. He was a prosecuting attorney. He was converted. He became a tent maker, and he supported himself, and he supported himself with free will offerings from people in the church. Those people were not tithing to Paul. Paul never took a tithe. Peter, James, John, none of them ever took a tithe. And if you think they did, you show it to me, would you? Write me an email. Show me where Peter took tithes of the parishioners that he was talking to. In fact, the Messiah told him, you don't take script, you don't take money, you don't take jack diddly squat, and you go from town to town and city to city, but go not from house to house. And he said, when you're there, you shake off the dust of the city if they don't receive you. So if you want to support your church, that's fine. But that church is supported out of your money. That's your tithes on money. You support the tithing system not by paying income tax. You support the tithing system by paying your tithes to widows, orphans, and poor old people, or to Levites, if you happen to know where one is. I haven't got a clue. I haven't met one, don't know one, couldn't find one with both hands at high noon with a road map. But I want to tell you a little story here about how these Levites work and why this system works this way. And then we'll take a look at the emblems of the priesthood and the civil service. I'll show you where these Levites what their badge of office is, and it's called Symbols of Our Celto-Saxon Heritage. Next time, but let me tell you a little story here about the Levitical priesthood in Tennessee. A preacher approached me over in Suwanee, Tennessee some years ago, and he asked me if it was true that I practiced the law of Moses. I told him that it was true, and he then asked me if I practiced the sacrificial laws. Perceiving his craftiness in asking this forked question, I asked him if he practiced the Levitical priesthood in Tennessee. And he emphatically denied that he did any such thing, and he proceeded to preach me a fire and brimstone sermon about Christ crucified and how Jesus did away with the sacrificial laws and the law of Moses. Now, I could see that this man was a Christian in distress over doctrine, so I apologized for my outrageous suggestion that he might be a practitioner of the sacrificial system of Tennessee, and I explained that I was a stranger from a far, far land called Idaho, and that I had heard that the people of Tennessee practiced the Levitical priesthood, the sacrifices and the heave offerings, under another name, calling it instead the judicial system. He stared at me for a few seconds, and as if I just announced that I was Mork from Ork. And I asked him if they had state highway patrolmen in Tennessee, and he admitted that they did. I asked him if they had police, lawyers, judges, courts and courthouses, courtrooms with bars and benches and fines for criminal activities. And again he said, yes. Once again he admitted that he and the rest of the people of Tennessee did have all of these accoutrements and all of these people, and that they made up the judicial system of the state of Tennessee. I looked at him and I said that they had told me the truth in far, far off Idaho, that the people of Tennessee were indeed a religious lot. Once more, he gave me that strange look and he asked how the judicial system was religious. So I told him the story. You drove down the road at 80 miles an hour and the policeman, who is ever vigilant looking for crime, sees you and he roars off in hot pursuit. When he catches up to you, he asks you for your driver's license, and he notes that it does not give you permission to drive at 80 miles an hour. He then arrests you, and he takes you to the nearest jail from where you are brought before the judge, who is sitting on the bench behind the bar in the courtroom, which is in the courthouse. You are stood beside by your lawyer, who is before the bench and behind the bar, and he enters a plea of guilty, which makes you a criminal. The judge then gives you a fine to pay and assesses you court costs. Now, if you don't like this, you can appeal to the Supreme Court, and this is called the judicial system. We call it the civil service here in the United States. But back in olden times, this system was called the Levitical priesthood, and it worked the same way that your judicial system does today in the United States. You see, the policeman of today is the high priest's servant who was constantly looking for sin. Sin is the transgression of the law, as we see in 1 John 3, verse 4. Sin is the transgression of the law. So when the high priest's servant uncovers your sin, he arrests you, and he puts you in ward, in the dungeon, in the temple, which we today call jail, in the courthouse. The courthouse is designed like a temple. It sits in the town square where the high priest, the judge, conducts the temple sacrifices in the holy place called the courtroom. You, of course, will recognize the high priest in the holy place by his long black robe. This high priest you call the judge. He sits behind the altar. The altar is called the bench today, which is behind the veil to the holy place. You call that the bar. To pass this bar, to pass this veil, and to approach the high priest requires an intercessor, called the lawyer. An intercessor, the Catholics call Mary. An intercessor, that the Protestants call Jesus. This intercessor will help you in your prayer to the high priest, in your plea about your sin, which is called a crime. That's what sin is. You know, it's a crime. And this prayer, the plea, is called a prayer. And in paragraph 20 of a civil action, it is still called a prayer for relief. That's what your plea is to the high priest. It's a prayer. So when you pray that you are guilty of this sin, you become a sinner, a criminal. And the high priest then imposes a sacrifice. The sacrifice of one ram of the first year, which is called the sin offering. A sin offering, today we call a fine. And he also imposes a heave offering called court costs. Court costs, two turtle doves, two chickens, two turkeys. If you think you got a raw deal, you can go to Moses through the Aaronic priesthood in the Holy of Holies. You can appeal to the Supreme Court. In olden times, this was done on the Day of Atonement. One day a year, Aaron, the high priest, went into the Holy of Holies. And when there was a legal problem, like we see in Numbers chapter 35, where there was an inheritance, and the priests, the judges, didn't know how to decide the case. They took it to the Supreme Court. They took it to God Almighty Himself on the Day of Atonement, who sent down the judgment. Today you call that the appellate process. Well, this system of law is called the Levitical priesthood. Today, it's better known as the civil service or the judicial system. You have it in every state in the Union. You have a dual system. You have a high priest, a higher priesthood called the federal system, and a lower priesthood called the state judicial system. Now, I closed my chiding of this Christian preacher a little by reminding him that he practices the sacrificial system in the state of Tennessee every time he goes to court to pay a traffic ticket. You see, Tennessee is a sovereign. A sovereign is a lawmaker. A sovereign makes law. And a lawmaker is a god. And that's why the first commandment says, "You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not bow down to them, nor shall you worship them. You shall not obey. You shall not practice. You shall not participate in their laws." It's an act of treason against your God, against your sovereign, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Moses. Now, to violate this law is called a sin. Sin is called the transgression of the law. A sin requires a sacrifice as a matter of law. So whether it be civil law or common law, people who practice the religion of the United States make sacrifice to their God. And they either do it voluntarily or involuntarily. You can walk in and plead guilty, or you can walk in and plead not guilty, and you can go argue your case. But in the end, when it's all said and done, if you're convicted, you will pay your sacrifice. Now, you may have to do penance for a number of years in the penitentiary. Or you may pay a fine. Or in some cases, you may actually pay with your life. Now, the Levitical priesthood, the high priest's servant, when he went out and he found you sinning, he found you reaping the corners of your field, would arrest you and put you in ward in the temple in the dungeon. This dungeon is located in the temple. The temple was the holy place. The holy place is called the courtroom today. The temple is called the courthouse. Being put in ward is being put in jail. Sin is crime. The high priest servant today is called the policeman, the highway patrolman. The high priest is the judge. The altar is the bench. The veil is the bar. The intercessor is the lawyer. The prayer is the plea. Being guilty of sin is being found guilty of crime. A sinner is a criminal. The sin offering, a ram of the first year. So in olden times, when you got caught and you got convicted, you were found guilty of sin, you would go out to your flock and find a ram of the first year. Bring it in. The Levite would kill the lamb, take its blood, take its fat, and burn it on the altar for a sin offering. He would cut off the right front shoulder. and he would give that to the Aaronic priests. Then he would keep the rest of it for himself and the local Levites, and then you would be absolved of your sin, absolved of your crime. Today, if you were visiting me and you went to town and you got a ticket, you could come back with your ticket and complain, and I could say, well, give me that ticket, Phil. I could take your ticket and go into Judge Jacobs and pay your fine. This is called grace, Phil. Let me ask you this. If I go in and pay your fine for you, would you then say that the speed limit in Missouri has been abolished and nailed to the cross? No, I'm telling you, it doesn't change the law one whit. You go out tomorrow and you sin again and you're speeding and you come back. And I say, Phil, the speed limit here is 65. You got to stop speeding. Give me that ticket. I run into the judge and I pay your fine a second time. That's grace. I'm a hell of a nice guy. And the judge doesn't care who pays the fine, as long as somebody pays it. This goes on three or four times, Phil. One of these days, it becomes a habit. And you're speeding to town at 80 miles an hour. After all, why shouldn't you? There's no speed limit in Missouri. And if you get caught, old George keeps paying the fines. Doesn't he? Well, Phil, at some point in time, you're going to bump up against what's called in the New Testament the unpardonable sin. Unpardonable sin. There comes a point in time, Phil, when I'm going to say to you, you know the law. And you're violating the law with premeditated forethought. It's one thing to sin in ignorance. It's something else, again, to sin with premeditated forethought. And that's why the Messiah said in the parable of the sower that unto them this is not given, because they would be responsible for their actions. They would be responsible because they didn't pay their tithe. The same guy, Dennis, you know, the guy that had too much money, he came in one day and he said to me, you know, I was better off before I ever heard of you. And I said, why do you say that, Dennis? And he said, because now I'm responsible for my actions. I said, yeah, but look at the benefits that you get from that. You're responsible for your actions. But God has promised to open you the windows of heaven. And you said yourself you got more second tithe than you know what to do with. He said, yeah, that's true. But he said, now I'm responsible for my actions and I have to practice the whole law. Before I met you, I was just a dumb bead-flipping Catholic and I didn't understand the law. Now I understand it. I said, you're right. And you're responsible for your actions. So you better act like you're an adult. And you better act like you're responsible. That's what the law requires. All right, we got one more story to tell you next time here on where are these Levites today? Next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And until then, you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So, until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.